Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Thanks for tuning in to the award-winning For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, we've already heard about their Creative Spaces Conference, so this morning we're going to catch up with the Cultural Alliance of Fairfield County, which is hosting a Creative Placemaking Conference coming up this week, which will focus on the role of artists, creative businesses, and cultural nonprofits in the economic, community development, and well-being of coastal Fairfield County, and the rest of Connecticut is invited as well. Then we'll speak with a longtime physical therapist at Gaylord Hospital in Wallingford to learn why Gaylord has sought and received accreditation in not one, not two, but three critical subspecialties for brain, spinal cord, and stroke rehab. Then we'll close visiting with the founders of the Chase Michael Anthony Kowalski, or CMAC, Sandy Hook Memorial Foundation to recap the great accomplishments they've been able to achieve with Race for Chase, honoring one of the 20 young lives lost at Sandy Hook Elementary School, and the role that you can play in making their future even brighter for the kids they serve. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Voquette, right after this reminder. Since 1982, CT NOFA has been digging in to ensure the growth and viability of organic agriculture, food, and organic land care in Connecticut. Organicon, their 2018 winter conference, is coming on Saturday, March 10th at Western Connecticut State University in Danbury, and you can get your early bird tickets until January 31st to attend this premier event for organic fans, farmers, gardeners, foodies, and families. You'll enjoy over 40 organic farm, garden, food, and advocacy workshops, great shopping, raffles, and their famous lunch provided by generous restaurants from across Connecticut. Learn more and get your early bird ticket discounts now by visiting ctnofa.org. Well, as you heard in our introduction, we are back on the line with the Cultural Alliance of Fairfield County. We spoke to them about a pilot program that they were taking up here in Connecticut called Space Finder. We will come back and talk a little bit about that with our guests this morning. We're pleased to be joined by David Green. He's the Director of Programs and Membership for the Alliance. They have an event coming up that may be of interest to many folks around the state. They are hosting this event at the Stepping Stones Museum. It is a creative placemaking conference called Shaping Community, and it's coming up on January 23rd and 24th. David Green, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you, John. It's great to be back again.
So let's flash back to November 2016, as you reminded me, when we last visited to help launch this Space Finder initiative.
Well, yes, it's actually it's just shy of 12 months that we launched Space Finder. Oh. It's a national project, and we are, as you said, piloting it in Fairfield County for the state of Connecticut. We're working with the State Office of the Arts, who are actually providing funding for it. It's a free service for those in the community to advertise spaces that could be used both by individual artists and by arts organizations and cultural organizations, either on a regular basis for rent or for one-off or even as a donated space. Mm-hmm. So we've got now close to 80 spaces that are listed on Space Finder, and we seem to have taken off. We are talking with Christina Newman Scott at the Office of the Arts in terms of the next step in terms of launching it around the state. Mm-hmm. But it's a very attractive way of getting property owners and community institutions connected with individual artists and arts organizations who are always looking for space.
Mm. Have you or the Alliance been getting calls from other communities outside of coastal Fairfield County that have been hearing about this and want to get on board?
Yeah, many of our other partners are interested around the state. And so I know in Hartford and Southeast Connecticut, there's been quite a bit of interest.
Would that be, would you be lending logistical support to, say, a sister or similar agency in those jurisdictions, or would this be something that would be still based in coastal Fairfield County, but sort of administering in places like Hartford or New London or elsewhere?
No, we would help our brothers and sisters, if you like, around the around the state to take control of their own contributions to this, and then eventually, I think we're expecting it to be a complete state-run system.
Right. Very good. And this, the initial Space Finder announcement, that did come at the Creative Spaces for the Creative Economy conference?
Yeah, conference, yes, which was all about the issue of spaces, finding spaces, working with communities on zoning laws, looking at what could be changed to make arts organizations be able to find and use spaces and create new spaces, how you could share spaces, and so on.
Mm-hmm. And on the heels of that one-day conference, a decision was made to become a little bit more ambitious and mount a two-day initiative coming up just next week. Tell us about this upcoming Creative Placemaking Conference, January 23rd and 4th.
So it's kind of moving from spaces to places, if you like. This movement that is known as creative placemaking has really been growing nationally over the last 5 or 10 years. And it's essentially ways in which we can harness the creativity, the vision, the imagination of individual artists and their organizations with the professionals at work in planning departments and in the Department of Economic Development, with professionals in health, transportation, and whatever, just to bring a greater sort of sense of imagination to projects that can liven up our neighborhoods, our towns, our cities, and so on. Every 2 years, the New England Foundation for the Arts, which is an umbrella organization for 6 of the state arts agencies in the Northeast, hold what they call the Creative Conference, Creative Communities Exchange, the CCX, where they demonstrate very successful creative placemaking projects. And I've attended a couple of these conferences and felt that we were a little lacking in terrific examples of creative placemaking in action. We have a few dotted around the county, but I was interested in seeing what we could do to galvanize groups to submit creative placemaking project proposals. So we thought that we would have a two-day conference, one day which would be looking at examples of the impact of the arts on our communities, like what are some of the examples of public art out there, and how has it affected the neighborhoods in which you see public art? What about artist spaces where artists have their studios, or artist residences? There are a number of interesting residences where an artist works with an institution, with a library, we actually have a great example at Weir Farm National Historic Site where artists go to work for a while. What's the role of theater in sort of creating placemaking? So we've got a day of panels, discussions, performances, videos, a kind of fun and interesting day looking at the impact of the arts on the community. And then the second day is a working day. We've been working with 9 of our towns in our region, assembling working groups, around 8 to 10 people in each team from each city, from each town. And they are going to gather on the second day, the Wednesday, and under the facilitation of senior staff from some national organizations, from the National Endowment for the Arts, from Art Place America, from the Local Initiative Support Corporation, who will work with these groups to craft project ideas throughout the day. And we've been actually holding town meetings in each of these nine towns with groups of around between 30 and 40 people, gathering their input, ideas for their feelings about their town, what some needs might be, how the town might be improved, and drawing up some principles that will be guiding the crafting of these project ideas on the Wednesday. And at the end of the day, they'll be able to pitch their project ideas to a funding panel, a panel of funders who will tell them, you know, how much further they have to go, how they need to tailor their project a little more for the particular funders. So the idea is to come out of this with some pretty close to final project proposal ideas.
And the tool and the expertise and guidance to craft the funding presentations most effectively.
Absolutely, yes.
And fantastic.
We are very fortunate to have these national experts come down. I think they've been fascinated by this project, and they want to get involved and lend their expertise to help our local groups do the best job they can.
Well, kudos to you and the Alliance for attracting this incredible panel. Jamie Bennett from Art Place America, Jennifer Hughes from the National Endowment for the Arts, Rebecca Cordes Chan from the Local Initiative Support Corporation. Folks, if you're listening and you're involved in the arts and you'd like to attend the First Day Public Conference, and we'll talk a little bit more about the specific programming, but our guest this morning, David Green, is Director of Programs and Membership for the Alliance. With support from the Connecticut Office of the Arts, the organization assists cultural organizations, artists, and creative businesses in Fairfield County through marketing, professional development, and advocacy services. You can learn more about them through fcbuzz.org. But David, there is still room for folks to attend if they want to pre-register?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, it's at the Stepping Stones Museum in Norwalk in the Multimedia Theater, which is an amazing space. Mm. And it's, yes, there's still plenty of space.
Excellent. We'll send them to shapingcommunity.eventbrite.com to register.
That's right.
If you're interested in going. And David, while this is sort of targeted for Lower Fairfield County, just a kind of review for the listeners who are elsewhere throughout Connecticut and beyond, how attending this event could be a benefit to them in the work that they're trying to do in their community or region.
Well, I think certainly in the panels, we're looking at models or examples of how this can happen, and like looking at the examples of public art. How has public art benefited the specific communities? That we have three artists talking about the projects that they've been working on over the last 5 or 10 years and the impact they've had on the communities. And that, for example, would be a good model for other communities to think about ways in which they could bring public art into particular places in the town or the city to stimulate greater activity, economic activity, and so forth. And so on with the other panels, looking at examples of artists in residence, looking at how theater can affect creating more of a vibrant town center. I should also mention one of our most interesting panels. We have a second keynote on storytelling, on creative storytelling and placemaking. Keith Stokes from the 1696 Heritage Group will be talking about the work that he's done. And then we have a fascinating panel with speakers from Bridgeport and from Greenwich talking about the importance of storytelling in bringing a wide and as comprehensive a range of stories from within the town together to help create a positive sense of the town. Many of our towns, I think, feel that they are suffering from negative stories, especially from the past.
Yeah, or perhaps.
While they feel that they have a pretty vibrant story going on, and there's the issue of how you bring that forward, how you can rebrand a town or a city. Mm. How do you get those stories going? How do you get the positive stories to bubble to the top to inspire people?
Sure, and I imagine too also recoup local identity in these days of so many bedroom communities that still have town centers, theaters, galleries that may be operating in a very fractured or individualized kind of treetops way and bringing it all together.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Fantastic. And Patrick McMahon, of course, with Connecticut Main Street Center, another planned keynote, certainly can bring stories from virtually all 169 Connecticut towns as to what he is seeing in terms of the benefits of arts organizations and cultural initiatives as well.
And Patrick is the new president and CEO of Connecticut Main Street.
Mm-hmm.
Center, and we're very pleased to be working with him. We actually worked recently with him and the Bridgeport Downtown Special Services District on a wonderful film festival, the Citizen Jane Film Festival, which was focused on how to get regular citizens involved in improving our neighborhoods and cityscapes. That was a very successful short film festival that we had back in November, and we'll actually be working again with celebrating the spirit of Jane Jacobs, the great hero of many urban planners, that is based on the power of the neighborhood, the power of the local neighborhood, as opposed to the grand plans of some of the developers. So we'll be celebrating Jane Jacobs again, I think, in May with what's called Jane's Walk, which is an international celebration of the power of the local neighborhood. So everyone should watch out for Jane's Walk coming this spring.
Fantastic. David Green, Director of Programs and Membership for the Cultural Alliance of Fairfield County, they are organizing a two-day creative placemaking conference called Shaping Community. It's coming up in a couple of days as we broadcast, January 23rd and 24th at the Stepping Stones Museum for Children. It's designed to demonstrate and discuss the role of artists, creative businesses, and cultural nonprofits in the economic, community development, and well-being of coastal Fairfield County towns, but as you've heard, plenty of room for and information to benefit individuals who are involved in these initiatives throughout the state of Connecticut, particularly for the first day of the conference. You can register at shapingcommunity.eventbrite.com or get more information by contacting the Alliance at fcbuzz.org. It's happening in Fairfield County, but has great benefits for communities throughout the state of Connecticut and perhaps beyond for our listeners in Long Island, New York, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, or wherever you are. We hope you can make it in coming up in a couple of days. shapingcommunity.eventbrite.com to register. David, once again, pleasure to speak with you, and very, very excited about all these developments, and hopefully we'll be talking to you in a few months about the upcoming Jane's Walk.
I look forward to that.
And
John, thank you so much.
That. Take care.
Yeah. Appreciate it.
Well, it's been about 5 or 6 months, I think, since we checked in with our friends at Gaylord Hospital over in Wallingford. Gaylord Specialty Healthcare is a 137-bed nonprofit specialty hospital, also known as a long-term acute care facility specializing in medical management and rehabilitation for patients who have experienced an acute illness or traumatic illness. accident. Gaylord has been on our radar for the quarter century plus that I've been working on the program. They've been a guest, as we talked about with my guest this morning before we went on the air, probably 10 or 12 times over the years. They do incredible work, but I just learned today that this distinguished hospital has a rare 3 subspecialty accreditation by the Commission on Accreditation of Rehabilitation Facilities, and we're going to talk a little bit about that in just a few minutes with our guest Lori Vickers. She's a physical therapist herself and manager of therapy services at Gaylord Hospital in Wallingford. If you'd like to learn more about them, gaylord.org is their website, nice and easy, and you can go there and learn all about them. Lori, thanks for joining us on the program.
Thank you for having me, John.
So first of all, a little bit about yourself. Physical therapist, something you kind of got oriented to in high school or college and been doing it ever since?
Yes, I out of high school, I went to college to be a physical therapist, and that was all the way back in 1989 that I graduated. I started working at Gaylord in 1991. Mm-hmm. So I've been here for 26 years working as a physical therapist, and now I'm still working as a physical therapist, and I'm also the manager of therapy services here.
I find so many people that go into professions like yours do so because they were inspired or angered seeing a loved one or someone in their circle either treated incredibly well or experiencing a very gifted clinician or caregiver. Or, as I said, they had a loved one who was the beneficiary of someone who was not so great in the field. What was it that prompted you to become a physical therapist?
For me, I just was always interested in the medical field and in just the helping field for one thing, but then I had an experience with a physical therapist myself, and that helped to guide me into that direction.
There you go. So let's talk a little bit about this history of Gaylord. I mean, long before the first time they appeared on the award-winning For the People 25 or 26 years ago, and through my years, childhood and high school, whenever I learned that someone in the neighborhood, a friend of a parent, friend of the family, or someone was tragically injured or had a stroke or something, then they go to Gaylord. You guys have been around a while.
We have been around a while. We have a great history, actually. It's so interesting. We started in 1902, so we're over 100 years old, and we started as a sanitarium for tuberculosis, mm-hmm. where the patients lived here. They were in the tents on the outside. It's just an incredible history, starting as a TB sanitarium, and our whole history as a pulmonary hospital. From there, as TB got eradicated, in about 1948, we became more of a chronic care hospital. We started working with polio epidemic patients, mm-hmm. and things like that. And in 1954, we became a rehab hospital. And we've done outpatient throughout the years, but we had a more formal outpatient and dedicated space starting in 1991 for our outpatient program. So we really have a long, extended history.
Mm-hmm. Before we drill into the specifics that we want to talk about over the course of our chat, I'm also interested now with a quarter century yourself in the field. What would you say is the most incredible advancement that you have seen or experienced or been able to put your hands on and use to the benefit of your patients that maybe even 5 years ago you would have thought was incredible, even verging on science fiction, perhaps, never mind 20, 25 years ago. What do you find has been the most incredible advancement in your field, you know, more from like 10,000 feet?
That's a really good question. And for me, it's the technology. There's been such a huge boom in technology. And as you said, just even in the last 5 years, what have I seen that is different is we're really at the cutting edge of this boom in technology. And we've been very fortunate that we were able to acquire what's called an EXO here at Gaylord. And we're the only facility in Connecticut that has an EXO, and it's an exoskeleton. And a lot of people, when they see it, they say, that looks like RoboCop. And it is a robot that somebody wears. It's got a backpack on it. It's got straps that go over your shoulders. And then it's connected to hip and knee motors. So we can put somebody in the EXO that they could have no movement in their legs or they could have some movement in their legs, and we're able to set it up so that either the robot takes the step fully for somebody, or we're able to set it up for somebody who has partial movement so that they can take, that it just helps with their movement. So we're able to adapt it for the needs of the particular person, which is fantastic. And that we've seen morph over the time that we've had the EXO. When we first got it, it was both legs worked together. They had to be programmed the same way. Now we can program the legs differently, and even just recently we had another upgrade on our machine that we can actually set it up so it provides not only assistance for somebody but actually resistance for them walking. So it's been incredible to see that technology take off.
Now, has the introduction of this technology turned a corner for you as a physical therapist professional in terms of providing, for lack of a better term, a missing link in taking someone who may, prior to the EXO's introduction, have gone through therapy for a severe injury that compromised their lower bodies, but never fully recovered or never fully regained partial or full wherewithal of their lower extremities. And because of the EXO and the technology and what it can do, now it has taken patients who may have even a few years ago not had full expectation of recovery and brought them to that point of recovery?
I think it has assisted us with that. It's been a great adjunct to our therapy. And we're able to get people up earlier than we used to be able to with the assistance of it. And we're also able to get people up. Initially, when somebody first starts getting up who has a lot of difficulty walking, it can be exhausting. They can need a lot of assistance and only be able to take a few steps when they first start. And with the EXO, we're able to get them up for more of an extended period of time and take many more steps than they were before. So we feel that is helping them regain that mobility quicker than they did before and be able to start it earlier than before.
Mm-hmm. Now, is this technology also, I mean, you say you're the only place in Connecticut that currently has the EXO technology, but for is this something that is modular enough so that if an individual needed it, they could also somehow access it in their own home environment?
So as far as EXO itself goes, the EXO machine does not have a home unit, but we have partnered also with ReWalk, which is another type of exoskeleton. There's a few out on the market. And ReWalk does offer a home unit, and we will look at patients who are interested to see if they fit all the parameters. And ReWalk would come here and train somebody in the use of it for them to have a home unit. So that is a potential for people now.
Excellent. Well, before we take a quick break, I also wanted to kind of come back to something we mentioned in the introduction, and that is the fact that Gaylord Hospital is accredited in three subspecialties by the commission that does that for brain, spinal cord, and stroke rehabilitation. Why is it so rare that an institution would not be accredited in more than one subspecialty of recovery?
It's a huge process to go through for the CARFIS accreditation. There's a couple thousand standards that you have to reach to meet their requirements. And it's just a very big process, and you need to have a lot of different opportunities for the patient. You need to have the technologies. And I think it's just a big process that many people choose not to go through for all of the certifications, and many will choose to just go for what's called CHIRP, which is the general rehab certification. But we thought it was very important that we specialize in these areas of spinal cord, stroke, and brain injury, and we wanted to be out there as a specialist and certified through CARF in all these areas. And we did receive certification for both inpatient and for outpatient services for all of those areas.
So from your perspective, how does elevating the Gaylord as an institution and has achieved the three separate subspecialty accreditations, how do you see that providing that little extra oomph in terms of the care delivery to patients?
Well, I think, one, it acknowledges the fact that we have patient-centered care here, family-centered care here, that we have the quality of programming here, and also just the way CARF works as an agency, too. They're very collaborative. So they work also to help to challenge you, and they'll bring suggestions to you to say, have you tried this? Or we're able to share what some other facilities have done. So it challenges us as well to take that next step.
Oh, great. We're talking with Lori Vickers, folks. If you're just tuning in, she's a physical therapist and manager of therapy services for 25 or almost 26 years at Gaylord Hospital in Wallingford. Gaylord's able to treat individuals who need care and rehabilitation for illness or injury related to the brain and nervous system, spine, bones and joints, lungs and other conditions, vision included. We're going to hear about that after the break. We want you to stick with us because there's a lot more that we're going to talk about with Lori Vickers, including what we heard about EXO. Now we're going to talk about BITS, and we're going to talk about their Center for Concussion Care and their great track record and how they're delivering really cutting-edge neurological therapy and medical care to patients. We'll be right back. Stick with us. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. The 14th annual Courage to Speak, Empowering Youth to be Drug-Free Family Night is happening March 13th. Beginning at 5:30 at the Roten Middle School in Norwalk. Our friend Ginger Katz continues to build this free event each year to bring students and parents together to talk openly and honestly about the dangers of drugs and to help students become outstanding anti-drug advocates and mentors for their friends and younger siblings. If you'd like to learn more or attend to register this free event, or to bring Ginger Katz and her Courage to Speak presentation to your school or community, just visit CourageToSpeak.org. All right. Thanks for hanging on. We're with Lori Vickers. She's a physical therapist and manager of therapy services at Gaylord Hospital in Wallingford. If you'd like to explore more background on some of the things we're going to touch upon in the next 8 or 9 minutes, you can go to gaylord.org. We were talking before we put the mic on this morning about how folks learn about Gaylord. And in fact, Lori was able to affirm that all of their patients don't come through referrals directly through emergency rooms and acute care facilities in Connecticut and beyond. In fact, many people over the years have requested to go to Gaylord when they are told that they need the types of services that this institution in Wallingford delivers. So, Lori, thank you for sticking with us. So let's talk about BITS. This is very interesting. We talked about EXO in the first segment. What's BITS all about?
So we're very excited about the BITS. That's our newest piece of technology here at Gaylord. The BITS stands for Bioness Integrated Therapy System. And what's really valuable about it is both all PT, OT, and speech, all three services can use this piece of equipment that we have. So we have three units. We have two that are very large, set up on very large like TV screens, and one that is an overbed unit, so it's a little bit of a smaller unit, but it allows us to take it to a patient room, which is fantastic. So one of the large ones for our inpatient area, one for outpatient, and then the mobile unit. And with this machine, we're able to work on balance, vision, sequencing, memory, tasks, vision. So it's really interactive. The patient, we have the screen, so it's the activity shows up on the screen, and it's almost, for a good example of it, is for a visual task. So the patient would be sitting in front of it or standing in front of it. We are able to elevate it to put it to the height of the patient to accommodate somebody who can or cannot stand. Mm-hmm. And let's say dots will show up on the screen, and we're able to test their vision by having them point to the dots. So you're looking at their vision at the same time you're looking at their balance while they're trying to reach and point to things, and there's multiple tests like that on this very large screen.
Mm-hmm. And this dovetails with our promise to tout your neurological therapy and medical care team. This must be a critical tool for them.
It is. It is. We're very excited about it. Since we've gotten it just shortly ago, it's gotten a lot of use, both in the inpatient area, the outpatient area, and like I said, with PT, OT, and speech. So it's great. It's rare that you have a piece of equipment that all the disciplines can use. Oftentimes, like the EXO, just PTs use the EXO, but for the bits, all three of our disciplines can take advantage of this piece of equipment.
Mm. And I guess another upside of folks coming to Gaylord is that they kind of get all of the expertise in one place. We mentioned the accreditation and the three subspecialties, but when folks come to Gaylord, if they need the services, they'll see doctors, physical therapists like yourself and your team, occupational therapists, speech and language pathologists as well. And some of these experts are not specific to Wallingford. They share services in other offices. Gaylord is somewhat diversified to a couple of other locations.
Yes, we do. So on our Wallingford campus, that's where all of our inpatient is, and our neurologic multi-service outpatient is here. So somebody who has a stroke or a brain injury, Parkinson's, MS, also we do amputees here, would come here and get that neurological programming. And if they need PT, OT, and speech, they would come to the Wallingford campus. We also have physiatry here. We have wheelchair assessment clinic here. Orthotics and prosthetics clinic. So we have a lot of different services, psychology, neuropsychology. Then we have two other satellite locations. We have North Haven and Cheshire, and they specialize in physical therapy, orthopedics, and sports medicine. We have a great crew at both of those facilities we have a lot of our staff have specialty certification in orthopedics. We have people who are trained in dry needling, people who are trained in Graston techniques. They also have a pool. We have a pool on both locations, Wallingford and North Haven. And they also do concussion care at those facilities as well.
And there's a vision care component as well?
Yes, we have specialized OTs for vision, one on an inpatient basis and the outpatient basis. So for somebody who has visual impairments from a neurological issue like brain injury or stroke, they can come here. We have a neurooptometrist who comes and consults here along with the vision specialists. We have the two occupational therapists who specialize in treating vision problems, and also vision as related to concussion as well.
Yeah, and let's stay on that subject. Really, it seems like, at least here in the United States, we've only been exposed to a significant amount of information about concussions, and it's kind of been on our radar as a nation for maybe about a decade. But Gaylord and folks like yourself have been dealing with individuals suffering from concussions for decades, and
right.
I'm sure you were standing on the sidelines saying, okay, we're here. Finally, everybody's
right.
Getting it. Let's close by touting your Center for Concussion Care.
So as you said, we've been dealing with concussion for many, many years, and it is good to see the public awareness out there right now, and that it's just increasing as time goes on. So somebody who has a concussion can come here, and they would see neuropsychology to get assessed for that. They would also see a physical therapist as well. And they could also see physiatry as well if they needed the medical side of it, too. And along with concussion, a lot of people have vestibular issues as well. So we also have a vestibular program, whether that be associated with concussion or whether it not be associated with concussion, that they would see a vestibular trained physical therapist.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of individuals suffering from concussion, are you finding that there are there's a lot more inclination now for people to come to Gaylord and actually adopt and follow your advice and instructions for recovery?
We have definitely seen an increase in referrals since it's been a lot more out in the public about concussion. So I think it definitely has impacted the amount of people that we're seeing and what people are also wanting to come here for.
Excellent. Well, as I said at the beginning of the program, Gaylord and a representative like yourself has been a guest on our award-winning For the People 10 or 12 times over the past 25 years or so. And it's great every time we talk to somebody, we meet somebody new and learn more about it. And in fact, I learned a lot more today than I had known before. So thank you so much for coming on. Lori Vickers is a physical therapist, 26 years, and now the manager of therapy services at Gaylord Hospital in Wallingford. They offer both inpatient and outpatient rehabilitation and can meet patients' needs through every stage of recovery for individuals who have experienced an acute illness or traumatic accident. Gaylord's main headquarters is right in the middle of the state in Wallingford, Connecticut. You can learn more about them at gaylord.org. Lori, great to speak with you, and thank you so much for the visit and all the great information this morning. Well, it's great to be able to catch up with guests who have established an initiative that just kind of grows and grows. And to this point, the great work that's being done by our guests this morning, Rebecca Kowalski and Kevin Grimes, is evident in some material that they sent me. Rebecca is the founder of the CMAK, or the Chase Michael Anthony Kowalski Foundation, which has invented an initiative called Race for Chase, all in memory of this wonderful and brave young man who we lost at Sandy Hook a little over 5 years ago. Rebecca, thank you for joining us on the program and letting us help you celebrate these incredible advancements that you've made in such a short time. Tell us a little bit of the backstory on putting the CMAK Memorial Foundation together.
Well, thanks, John. We really appreciate the opportunity to do this. Basically, we call it the CMAK Foundation, mm-hmm. In honor of Chase. And Chase, at the age of 7, was a winning triathlete. With no help from his mother or father, neither one of us are big athletes at the time. And he taught himself how to swim. His dad taught him how to bike. And he grew up running probably at the age of 2.5 at our friend Kevin's wife's track meets. Mm-hmm. So with that, with everything that happened through 12-14, we knew that we wanted to honor his spirit, and what better way than by offering a triathlon, because his self-esteem was so boosted when he did his triathlon that it was just a perfect fit for us.
And I know from your previous visits to the program and our interactions outside the radio world that while you say you were no inspiration to him to become a marathon runner at such a young age, he has inspired you to participate in a number of marathons at this point, right?
Well, not marathons. Let me correct that. I'm not ready for that.
5Ks.
That goal. But triathlon, yes. As we started the program together for Chase, he inspired so many athletes to do amazing things in triathlon and marathon and just, healthy living that, a friend called me out on it and said, geez, you're asking these kids to become triathletes and you're not one. So with that, I took on that challenge, and I am happy to say that I am a triathlete.
Okay. And the other cool thing is that one of the initial affiliations that you made was with my hometown YMCA in Waterbury, which continues to be a big player in this whole movement, right?
Absolutely. The Greater Waterbury Y is instrumental in everything that we do. Our partnership has grown, and it has, you know, helped us take this program from 3 YMC sites to 26 in 4 states in the 5 years that we've been doing this.
And at the same time, also raising some important money for preschool scholarships.
Yes, absolutely. To me, it was very important to honor Chase. Preschool was so important to him. He had a speech delay, and with preschool, he found friendships that actually helped change his life with the speech delays. And I wanted to be able to do that. He never experienced high school, so, you know, just a regular high school scholarship to college just didn't seem fitting. But many people can't afford to go to preschool, so giving preschool scholarships was just another really wonderful way to honor his spirit.
And the other thing that we hear so much about is that so many kids in Connecticut and beyond can benefit from things like summer camps and summer programs, and so many don't have the opportunity to go. But now, thanks to the Race for Chase training program, there are no cost opportunities for kids to go through a summer program and not only racing and running, but also learning potentially life-saving skills like swimming and biking, all components of the triathlon, but also you know, especially the swimming lessons, very critical, especially to certain demographics who may not otherwise be exposed to this opportunity.
Yes, absolutely. We've taught over almost 300 children how to swim in the past 4 years, and 269 children how to ride bikes. But the swimming aspect of it is huge. Being in Newport, we, you know, they're on an island basically, and, mm-hmm. and some of those children didn't know how to swim, and it's definitely a life-changing, life-saving opportunity to be able to have the coaches teach them that aspect.
Excellent. Well, let's give you a break for a couple moments and bring Kevin Grimes into the conversation. Kevin, thank you for coming in and joining us this morning. As we broadcast this on the 21st of January, we're just a few days away from an exciting event that's going to create and familiarize so many more people with the CMAC Foundation and Race for Chase. Tell us about what's going to be happening a little bit later this week.
Well, this month we take the opportunity to sort of celebrate what we did last year with the Race for Chase Kids Tribe programs, but also we take the opportunity to sign agreements with the sites that are going to be operating in 2018. We have our 6 new sites this year to add to the 20 sites that we had last year. So all the 20 sites are signing up again because they love the program. But we have 6 new sites that are interested in to join. A few of them are down in South Carolina. There's a few in Rhode Island where we started last year for the first time. And we have our first program in New Hampshire, which is going to be the pilot program for expanding in that state. So we're very excited about the prospects for the program and certainly the enthusiasm by each of the sites to want to continue.
And, coincidental that the 26 sites, one of each representing lives lost at Sandy Hook across the 4 states, but bright side is you're boosting the accessibility and availability of this program to so many more athletes. Let's talk about the numbers.
Well, we started with the program. There were 3 different sites and 90 athletes, all here in Connecticut. It was very close to Sandy Hook. And then in expanding out through the years, through Connecticut and then starting in South Carolina, Rhode Island, now New Hampshire, We'll have over 800 triathletes at the end of our finales, at the end of the programs in August. So we're very excited about bringing another 800 kids to the point of doing a triathlon. And not only that, we mentioned the swimming and the biking aspects. We do have a relationship with Bikes for Kids, who provide the bikes for our programs. And through that relationship, we're able to allow any of the children who came to the program without a bike to take one home with them so they can continue to practice and enjoy a bike as a kid would love. Mm.
And I know we touched on the subject of swimming and swimming lessons with Rebecca, but I mean, some of these kids not only don't know how to swim, they literally are afraid to go in or near the water. And as a result of their familiarity and coming on board with the Race for Chase program, they are literally now able to participate in these triathlons.
Yeah, the program is an amazing environment for kids of all abilities, all exposures, etc. So they get there. They may be afraid of the water, but with these, actually, the real heroes are the coaches there that, you know, are make it such a great environment that they're, you know, willing to try. And then with the support of really all the other athletes too, they get to the point where they're ready to do whatever. And give it a try and do their best. And through that, it's only 6 weeks. They learn how to bike and swim in that time, and they complete the triathlon, mm-hmm. which is just amazing to me.
And the other thing I'd like to just add to that part is, you know, part of it is they want to do this for Chase, you know.
Yeah.
They know that Chase isn't able to do this anymore, so they will overcome their fears knowing that their angel Chase is by their side, and he's not going to let anything happen, and helps to empower them to get over fears, to, you know, be able to tackle many things in life, not even just the swimming, biking, or running, but just, you know, bullies and all different aspects. It's just a really beautiful thing.
Yeah, and another point we really hadn't yet touched on, thank you for bringing that up, Rebecca, because, you know, the empowerment and the leadership skills that the Race for Chase program has the potential of endowing on every single participant, including the volunteers and the staff and others. I mean, your son and his memory and the incredible and indelible mark that he left in his time with us is touching thousands.
Absolutely. We had a boy that did the program in Rhode Island, and he was able to, the backstory really quick was that it was very difficult for him to go to school, and he would see a social worker, and she would help prepare him for the first day of school, what his class would be like, and he'd been doing that for the past few years. Well, he completed the program, and this summer when he was going back to school and he met with the social worker, he actually told her, "I don't think I'm going to need you anymore. I'm a triathlete now. I can do this on my own."
Incredible.
Stories like that just, I mean, it warms your heart, and it just makes you know that we are definitely reaching the core of these kids, and they get it, and their families are so thankful for the change that really our angel Chase invokes in them.
Yeah. Well, if we have anyone who is listening, a corporate leader, decision maker, or an individual who may have the means, it's important for them to know that the cost per program to run these six-week summer initiatives is about $12,000 each, plus this big grand finale of each program with additional cost. So if anyone is out there who is interested in finding out how to be an underwriter for one or more of these initiatives, you can go to cmakfoundation.org. Along with monetary support, the organization is always looking for volunteers and other in-kind efforts or donations. So you can learn how to connect to talk about that or volunteer through the website cmakfoundation.org. Foundation, cmacfoundation.org. In the last minute or so that we have, there's a couple of events coming up in the short term leading up to the big community triathlon at Great Hollow Lake in Monroe on July 8th. In a month and a half or so, on March 16th, there's a fundraiser that's coming up at Roberto's in Monroe. Of course, April 15th and 16th is the Boston Marathon and the BM Midnight Bike fundraiser. And then there's a motorcycle event coming up in Oxford on May 20th. You can find out about these and other exciting things going on into and through the summer, including an August golf tournament up in Barrington, New Hampshire. All kinds of great things going on. CMAKFoundation.org. Our guests are Kevin Grimes and Rebecca Kowalski, who lost her son Chase at Sandy Hook, and out of it has grown this CMAK, the Chase Michael Anthony Kowalski Sandy Hook Memorial Foundation, and the Race for Chase Initiative. Thank you both for taking some time on the program this morning to tell us about all the incredible stuff that has yet to be done in Chase's name. And we'll look for you out on the water or on your bikes or out on the road. Thank you so much for taking some time this morning.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host and do not necessarily represent the views of Connoisseur Media. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a community calendar item relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make a request for consideration in writing via email to me at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be viewed upon request weekdays during normal business hours in the New Haven area at 440 Wheelers Farms Road in Milford, and for our Hartford stations at 869 Blue Hills Avenue in Bloomfield. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. This is John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. Don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab at our radio station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.